The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
There's a Zen koan that I'm fond of, though I wouldn't pretend to know, understand it. But it's it says, someone asks a Zen master in China, what's Buddha? And the Zen master says, ordinary mind is Buddha. Ordinary mind. And this kind of, you know, goes against the what people ordinarily think. You know, if you're ordinary, certainly you're not a Buddha. I mean, your mind, I mean, you're practicing in order to cope, deal with your attachments and fears and desires and all this stuff that goes on in there. This mind can't be Buddha. But they said the ordinary mind is Buddha. And I like it because it's a little bit of an antidote to the idea that becoming a Buddha, being enlightened, being spiritually mature is some extraordinary state, like it takes you out of the world or out of the ordinary stuff. Maybe it makes us just more ordinary than we are. But I wanted to introduce, this was an introduction to an idea that I found very helpful in practice, and that is that whenever you hear Buddhist teachings, a good vantage point from which to try to understand it is that to reflect on how you already know what you're being taught. What experience do you already have that makes this true for you? And what areas of your life is it true? So, you know, it's easy to hear Buddhist teachings and they can seem lofty and special, and after all, it's one of the great world religions, so it must be really, you know, a lofty, powerful thing. And so maybe you have to study a lot before you can understand it. But don't do that. Rather, listen the best you can, and then say, how do I already do this? How do I already know this? So, for example, the heart of the Buddha's teachings is the Four Noble Truths. And so you hear that there's suffering, there's the cause for suffering, there's the cessation of suffering, and there's a path to the cessation. So you could try to understand it, you could study it. There's 12 different stages or phases or aspects, spokes to understand it. And you can get into the details and subtlety of it and get more and more kind of confused. Or you can ask yourself, how do I already know that this is so? How can I know? Do I already know that some of my suffering, some of my stress is there because of how I cling? And have I seen how letting go of that clinging, ceasing of that clinging, leads to the ending of that suffering? And then you might say, so what might come to mind immediately is no. Because you're focusing on your big existential issues. But ask again, you know, how do I already know this is true? And it might be true when you are at a traffic light in your car. You're driving along, and you see the light turn yellow and then red, and you have to stop. And you feel that how uncomfortable that is, how distressing it is. You have an important place to go, you're late for getting to where you need to go, and you feel very impatient for the light to turn green. And it turns out to be an extraordinarily long red light. And you feel kind of the agitation build, and then someone going crosswise to you, tries to get across the other side, but doesn't because there's so much cars backed up. So they actually can't get out of the intersection the whole time that your light turns green for you. So you can't go anywhere. And so the impatience, you know, it gets more and more worked up, right? That's the suffering. And so you maybe you can see, I'm suffering because I'm holding on to wanting to get someplace and having my way. And perhaps if it's, you know, a relatively minor issue at a traffic light, maybe you can see, I can just sit back and relax. You can let go. You're you are you know, there could be something really, really simple, ordinary thing in daily life, like you were counting on having toast with jam, and so you toast, you put the toast in the toaster, your toast was done, and you went to the refrigerator and there was no jam, and you feel this distress, and it occurs to you, you know, it's okay, I don't need to have the jam today, I'll let go of it, maybe I'll just have butter or just have peanut butter or something. And let go, and okay, that's okay. In that letting go of the jam, attachment to jam, and seizing that discomfort you have, you've discovered the Four Noble Truths, or at least the first three. In letting go of your impatience, standing at the traffic light, you've discovered the Four Noble Truths. They're operating for you in a very simple, ordinary way. I would argue that all of you know really well the Four Noble Truths, or the first three at least, you wouldn't have gotten so far in your life unless you had succeeded many, many, many times to see your suffering, to see the cause of it, and let go. Standing in line at the supermarket, you get impatient, and you realize there's no point to be impatient here, the line's going to take however long it takes. I'll let go and just stand here. Then just letting go there. That's the first and three noble truths. So we already do it, and we do it a lot, I believe. And so if we see that we're already doing it, then perhaps what Buddhism is suggesting is, can you spread out and do it in the places you haven't yet done it? Can you expand it out further and further into your life? Can you take something that's very ordinary? And I would argue it's very ordinary to let go of your impatience waiting for the red light. And maybe there's better examples you can think of for yourself. Some very ordinary, simple ways in which you do it. And it's very ordinary. It's ordinary mind. But then we're trying to do it, spread it out and integrate it into all aspects of our life. So that those insights, that understanding, that thing we're already doing, is we do in more and more and more areas, including the areas which are really hard. Places where the ways in which our attachments are embedded really deep are maybe hard to see and hard to let go of. So, for example, the attachment to life, to being alive. That's a very powerful one for people. People think it's a reasonable one, but it's going to cause a lot of suffering if you have it at the wrong time. But to face our attachment and really deal with it and work with it, that's not an easy thing to do. But it's just still the same ordinary thing as a traffic light. It's just that stakes are much higher. But it's the same principle. If you're attached, you'll suffer. If you let go of the attachment, that suffering goes away. And so there's, attachments to relationships, attachment to your opinions, attachment to your identity. There's a lot of powerful places that we're encouraged to extend out this very simple insight. So I believe that sometimes it's a lot easier to be inspired or find Buddhism meaningful if we begin with a notion that I'm already doing these things, and then the question, how is this already true for me? And given that it's already true for me, how does it make sense to expand it or develop it or grow it out into my life? Because then it becomes personal. Then it becomes something meaningful. Then it becomes your own. But if you take it as being a lofty philosophy that is so far and distant from anything that you can manage to do today, then, it can be discouraging. I would like to believe that the Buddhist path is mostly made up of the continuity of a lot of these small steps. And so to begin understanding how it works in these small, ordinary ways, and then doing it continuously throughout the day, much of the day, that builds momentum and support. So when you come to meditate, when you come on retreat, when you come into the big crises of your life, you have momentum and understanding and familiarity to this process. You've recognized really well, oh, here's suffering, here's clinging, and here's letting go. I know that, and I've exercised that muscle a lot at the traffic light, in the supermarket, you know, all these different places in my life. And now I'm being tested. Now I'm being asked to do it in a time of crisis. And since I'm familiar with this, maybe it's easier for me to do it. And I'm not being asked to do something supernatural, or I'm not being asked to do something that requires a foreign belief system, a metaphysics. I'm rather being supported to do something thoroughly that is pretty ordinary. So I hope you take your ordinary mind, ordinary things you can do, and make it extraordinary. So you can be really ordinary. So thank you very much.